My sermon is titled, Waking Up and Not Waking Up. A lot of it is indebted to our friend David Tetro, who preached here last week. He and I have been in deep conversation through most of the fall, and many of the concepts and content of this sermon come out of those conversations. So, a few summers ago, I almost died again. This time around, I was stung by some yellow jackets from a nest I had unwillingly run over with my lawnmower. Their stings hit the backs of my legs like baseball bats, 4 or 5, I think. Soon, I was at the urgent care where our friend Susan Walkley used to work. And then again soon, I was unconscious, slouched in a wheelchair, passed into anaphylactic shock. Lots of things were happening around me, all of which I was unaware. It was only later that I heard about the drama of my kids who had come with me and my friend who came to comfort them and take them home. Later, I knew about the swirling work of the staff trying to wake me up. I did wake up to a slap in my face and a voice calling my name, seeing the last of 2 or 3 EpiPens in my thigh and wondering why these people were bothering me and calling me back from somewhere I only remember as pleasant. That whole event reminded me of an important lesson that I regularly forget, that death comes to us in its own time, with no effort necessary on our part. And in the months following that day, aided by another and more severe illness that threatened my life, I increasingly came to realize at my root that I would die one day. It's a strange thing to say. Yet I noticed that never before had I actually believed it to be true, despite all the evidence that everything dies in time. Grappling with my approaching death became for me a path of waking up through the very real certainty that I would, one day soon, not wake up at all. It has become the first step in waking up from my lifelong Trump Tower of delusion. So I have a confession to make now, and that is that I like to read ancient wisdom literature. You know those bumper stickers, I'd rather be, fill in the blank. Mine would be, I'd rather be reading ancient wisdom literature. College religion classes ruined me, I'm afraid. And one of my favorites is the commentary written by the Vietnamese monk Thich Nhat Hanh on a central Buddhist text, the Heart Sutra. In the sutra, the bodhisattva named Avalokiteshvara is meditating. And these are the first lines. Avalokiteshvara, while practicing deeply with the insight that brings us to the other shore, suddenly discovered that all of the 5 skandhas are equally empty. And with this realization, he overcame all ill-being. You should know that in this case, the 5 skandhas are the means by which humans exist and know anything in the world. It's kind of a technical Buddhist term. And part of what the Bodhisattva of Compassion discovered here is that we generate our world through the action of our minds in relation to things around us. If we're suffering and miserable, our minds are the primary source of that misery. But the good news is that in the power of our minds to generate worlds also lies the solution to that suffering. The means by which to untie the knots and thickets which trap us like a cage. He also discovered then that our interconnectedness is so thorough that it's not just that we couldn't live without the support of everything around us. It's that we would never even have existed without this interconnectedness. Never born, never thought of, and neither anything else that we know or experience. No birth, no death, no fullness, no emptiness, no being, no non-being, to echo the words of the sutra. None of these things are separate entities. They exist only through their connection to the rest. This realization works a profound change in the way we go about making ourselves exist. All the goals and achievements we thought were important come into question. All these differences and preferences that we use to mark ourselves as separate, distinguished, and of higher value than those around us fall to pieces. And if none of those things are real, beyond the delusions we've generated around them, what about all our life projects? Those are made up too. For me, the closeness of my own death has caused the Bodhisattva's discovery to resonate. It's become a priority for me to spend less time on my world construction and more time looking inside my own mind. What I discover there is, at first, a great deal of noise and chaotic activity. And then deeper, once I give things enough time to settle, I begin to discover a silent space. It's a space where the details of my constructed self, with all its fears and preferences, starts to weaken and lose its hold. Sister Martha Reeves, who writes under the pen name Maggie Ross, is an Anglican anchorite, a solitary under direct vows to the Archbishop of Canterbury. She's a modern-day Christian mystic. In a 1993 essay to which this sermon is indebted, she writes, "There is a complete silence common to all humanity, a gift that language can neither create nor intrude upon. This silence, the complete suspension of self-consciousness, cannot be achieved in any sense or grasped by any means." To use the words achieve or grasp in regard to this sort of silence is a contradiction. For the methodology for becoming available to silence and its completeness is ungrasping. She describes the path toward that internal silence, which contains all things and which embraces every possibility. The first part of this path involves shedding my death grip on the way I want everything to be. Things must go my way, or I'm angry and disappointed, with my expectations unmet. This is my cage. It's all me, all the time. Until I get past that, there are a few other possibilities. When I learn how to go to this place inside through close attention, then the possibility opens up for me to go outside myself. The possibility arises that I can see things in all their huge multiplicity, and not with the boundaries that I set for myself in my delusion. And there's another critical aspect to this practice that Sister Ross identifies so well. It can only be achieved by a slow process of letting go, not by effort to achieve a particular goal. She calls this the paradox of intention, that if one intends to become silent, then silence moves farther away. The Buddhist tradition tells us that this silent wisdom lies at the root of who we are, and that the only reason we don't see it is that it is obscured by a million things we imagine are more important. As Buckminster Fuller says, you uncover what is when you get rid of what isn't. We let go and silence begins to appear. Lately, I've been practicing with our own David Hamilton and Stan Rockwell in Tai Chi Qigong, which is a Taoist meditative movement tradition from China. David instructs us in every class that the movement should be done with the least effort possible, with complete relaxation. And that's the opposite of every movement exercise I've ever done. This is a good time of year to be talking about movement exercise. So I want you to feel what I'm talking about, this letting go of effort. So if you're able, would you stand up right now? If you're not, sitting down will work fine too. So we're just going to do a few of the Qigong motions. And again, these motions are without any effort whatsoever. As little effort as possible to get your body to move in the way I'm asking you to make it move. And see if you can do this with complete attention, a very close focus on what this feels like to you. Okay? So the first motion, your feet are about hip distance apart, pointed forward. And notice your hands. And let your hands begin to float up as if they're attached to balloons until they're about forehead level. And then slowly bringing them down, palms facing in, down the front of your body. Centering the chi. As your hands float up, you inhale. And as your hands move down, you exhale. This is very nice with your eyes closed, if you'd like to approach it that way. Wherever you are in your motion, when you get to the bottom, come to rest. Move into the next motion, just raising arms. So once again, like there are balloons attached to your hands, let them float up in front of you to about shoulder level. And then with relaxed wrist, they come back down. You can bend your knees slightly. As you go down, inhale, lift the arms, straighten the legs. Exhale, lower the hands, bend the knees. If you're relaxed enough, this can begin to feel very nice. One last motion. Good. Thanks very much. You can have a seat again. So Tai Chi is a physical form that loops energy inside the body rather than the fighting forms that it mimics. You didn't see any of that in the movements that we just made, but in some Tai Chi or Qigong motions, there are punches and kicks and things like that. They're done with an entirely different intent than, say, the punches in Kung Fu. Which instead express force and sometimes violence in a in a discharge of force, right? Exercised on whatever the target of the punch is. This is a totally different thing. Instead, these Qigong motions are meant to be a physical practice of letting go with deep attention. And let me now put in a plug for David's class, which starts this week. 10:30 a.m. on Wednesdays, he's starting up a new series. It's down in one of the classrooms. I think it's free now, too. So if you're available 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, come on over. So over time, as you practice this slow letting go, you may become aware of a reservoir of energy that begins to grow in you. We constantly discharge that energy in all our tasks and projects throughout our days and our weeks and our whole lives. No wonder we're exhausted. But it's possible instead to go through life looping that energy back in on itself, allowing it to cultivate and grow. At first, you might imagine this is a selfish way of living, but in truth, those energy loops begin to extend beyond the body to embrace and combine with the energies of people around us. And in this way, we create broad systems of relationships and connection that enrich rather than drain us. And from those energy loops emerges a whole field of possibility, a creative well of energy. And that is certainly a topic large enough for another day. So here are some more suggestions for practicing this letting go and moving into silence. You can meditate. You can walk in the woods. You can play with stacking up rocks. You can focus intently on making a mandala or some other piece of art and then destroy it. You can study the intentional uselessness of performers like Avner the Eccentric. Remember last week from David Tetreault's sermon? The video that he showed us? Basically, you just attentively waste time on a regular basis. When's the last time you had someone encourage you to do that? I used to think that not waking up is what would have happened if those EpiPens hadn't worked. Falling into death. Now I suspect that not waking up is where I was most of the time I thought I was alive. And that the path toward genuinely waking up was begun by that imminence of death. It turns out that what appeared to be a deathly losing was instead a deep letting go into creative energy, connection, and peace.